This is Julia Butterfly Hill with listener-supported radio for Peace International, your global community forum.
You are listening to Radio for Peace International and our coverage of SoulFest 2003. Julia Butterfly Hill is our next speaker. Julia Butterfly Hill, you may remember, occupied an ancient redwood tree she called Luna for 2 years to keep the chainsaws at bay. Julia will be speaking for the next hour. Stay tuned to this station in the weeks that follow as Radio for Peace International, Scott Fratcher, and Allison Thompson will release an interview with Julia Butterfly Hill as she discusses her views on the World Trade Organization, carbon trading, how she has tried to turn her media attention into positive action, and many other subjects that can only be experienced with Julia's own motivated telling. Radio for Peace International, Scott Fratcher and Allison Thompson will also be releasing exclusive interviews with folk singer Jim Page, Starhawk, and many other interesting views. So stay tuned, as after a short introduction, Julia will be taking to the stage as only she can.
Hi, I'm Teresa from Pacific Paradise in Humboldt County. We support Radio for Peace International, the people's voice.
Hi, my name is Larry Freed, and I'm the producer of the Eco Drama Playwrights Festival, otherwise known as Earth Matters on Stage, and we support Radio for Peace International.
For 738 days, Julia Butterfly lived in the canopy of an ancient redwood tree called Luna, to help make the world aware of the plight of ancient forests. Julia, with the help of steel workers and environmentalists, successfully negotiated to permanently protect the 1,000-year-old tree in a nearly 3-acre buffer zone. Her 2-year vigil informed the public that only 3% of the ancient redwoods remain and that the Headwaters Forest Agreement, which was brokered by the state and federal agencies and Pacific Lumber, Maxam Corporation, will not adequately protect forests and species. On December 18, 1999, Julia Butterfly Hill, then 26, came down to a world that recognized her as a heroine and powerful voice for the environment. Her courage, commitment, and profound clarity in articulating a message of hope, empowerment, love, and respect for all life inspired millions of people worldwide. Julia Hill chose the name Butterfly in her childhood, and like her namesake, she has undergone a great metamorphosis. She grew up in a deeply religious family as the daughter of a traveling evangelical minister that later settled in Arkansas. In 1996, she suffered nearly fatal injuries in an auto accident. During close to a year of medical treatment and recovery, she had time to reassess her purpose in life. 2 weeks after being released by her doctors, she headed west on a journey of self-discovery with no particular destination. But her first sight of the ancient redwoods overwhelmed her with awe. She said, "When I entered the majestic cathedral of the Redwood Forest for the first time, my spirit knew it had found what it was searching for. I dropped to my knees and began to cry because I was so overwhelmed by the wisdom, energy, and spirituality housed in the holiest of temples." Julia and other forest activists founded Circle of Life to inspire, support, and network individuals, organizations, and communities so together we could create environmental and social solutions that are rooted deeply in love and respect for interconnectedness of life. Through education and outreach, they promote efforts to protect and restore the earth. When I asked Julia today what happened with that awful scoring of the tree that some maniacal logger went up and cut a circle around the tree, after it all happened, she said that the tree had miraculously grown back together again. No one can figure out how. It was an uncanny method. There's no scientific explanation for it. So, to me, it's a real honor to present Julia Butterfly once more to you at our 8th Annual SoulFest 2003. Julia Butterfly.
Hey, everybody. Whoa. How's everybody doing? In the shade, right? Everybody who's out of the shade is like, we're okay. We're hanging in there. You got to give me a minute to undo this because, as was mentioned, I grew up with a preacher for a father, so I have a hard time standing behind pulpits. And also I have this tendency when I get around very large wooden objects to climb up in them and not come down for a couple of years. And I don't know if Soulfest likes me that much. Well, it's really great to be here with you today. I really enjoy being able to see all the different faces that make up a world, a community, a family of people who believe that another world is possible and that that world is happening every moment of every day and that we're a part of that world. And it feels really good to look in the faces and kind of see the mirrors that there's so many looks to what it means to care about the world, but underneath all the many faces, the core care and commitment is still the same. There's a recognizing and an understanding of people that there's certain intrinsic qualities to life that are the right of all beings, not just for those who can afford it. That there's an inherent right to life for all beings, not just the humans. And that there's an inherent right to life that's interwoven and that what affects one affects the other. And so that's why I'm here today. But to start out, I'm actually going to ask a question. Because I'm really a rebel, you know, in case you haven't. I know I look a little different now than when I lived in a tree. I have a lot of different looks. But really, the rebel in me is always trying to find a new way to challenge the stereotypes and the labels and the boxes. And one of those boxes is that we come to events like this, and the person who stands on the stage is the expert, and all the people in the audience are the passive audience waiting to receive the knowledge from above. And I'm not really about that, you know. I've always said I don't claim to be an expert. I don't claim to be perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I don't claim to be anything other than a person who fell madly and passionately in love with the Redwoods and through that process fell madly and passionately in love with the world. And I've been doing everything I know to do from that moment on to help create a loving and healthy and just world for all. Yeah. I'm glad you're part of that too. So to break the myth of I'm the expert on stage handing down my tidbits of wisdom, I'm going to start by asking a question. And you can just throw it out to me, and I'm actually going to write some of them down. Why are you here? And when you think about that, my hope is that the answer is not only to why are you here at Soulfest, but that that answer ties into why you feel you are here on this planet alive in this time. I hope that the reasonings are parallel. So anyone want to be bold and visionary and speak out why you're here?
To show the world about my new invention.
To show the world about your new invention. Okay, people who are interested in his new invention, you follow the guy with the blue sign. Great. Yes, down here. Connection with community. Boy, that's so important. You know, one of the things, I've been talking about, like, you know, I was in the media for 2 years, but I wasn't exposed to it for 2 years, you know? And then I came down from the tree and started looking at the media, and I was thinking about how so many people in our world go to mainstream corporate media for their understanding of community. And I'm like, if Friends and Sex in the City is all the community we got, we're screwed, right? On more than one level. So, because it's like our community is not a bunch of homogenous kind of looking, acting people. Community is about people who are willing to engage in something more important than what the latest trend in clothing is and who's dating whom. There's some things that are a little more, not that those things can't be interesting conversations every once in a while, but as a main theme of life, they're not so important. So it's great, that connection with community on issues that you don't necessarily see represented in mainstream world, that the community is that connection, that's what it's all about. That's a great one. Someone else, yes. Wow, she read the book Legacy of Luna, and that's what brings her here right here, right now. Thank you. The wonderful thing about that book, too, for me, that I always like, you know, to preach about is the fact that it's printed on 100% recycled, no chlorine bleach, all soy-based inks, and 100% of my profits are donated. So, you know, just had to put that little plug in there. Only be, and the reason I put that plug in there is because I'm trying to put a little bit of a jab into the side of all the people who are writing really groovy conscious books in totally ungroovy unconscious ways. I'm asking them to step it up a little bit too, because I really believe that the message is only as solid as the way in which it's carried. So we invite those people. Say that again. And what about how it's published and distributed? That's one that comes up a lot, because there's small independent publishers and distributors, and there's very large corporations. And the reason she's bringing it up is because I did go with a larger publisher. But the reason I weighed all the options a lot, and part of what I saw was that at that time in the larger publishing world, there was no one who had the power to bring that kind of ecological printing into the main publishing world. And also that the other options that I was looking at, the message would be going to the same people who are already hearing it. And so I made a decision to go through that world into a community of people who don't oftentimes check out smaller publishers. And the result is we got a very large corporation who said, we can't print on those ways you're saying because it's cost prohibitive. And I said, okay, fine, I don't need your deal. And they said, oh, okay, well, we'll do one of those things, but we're not going to do all of them. Okay, cool, I don't need your deal. And then, you know, what happened was that I ended up in the tree, right, making it in Rolling Stone and George Magazine and, like, four different big hits, one right after the other. They came back to me and said, okay, how do you want to publish it again? So part of the reason I did it was because I knew that because of the power of mainstream media and the culture that that creates, it almost forms a muscle, and that I had an opportunity to exercise that muscle in a world that it's not often exercised. And the result has been that I'm really honored and blessed to be one of the co-founding authors of something called the Green Press Initiative that is helping every author get the muscle they need to get their publisher, whether it's a small publisher or a large publisher, to print in ecologically and socially sound ways. So thanks for your question. Okay. Anybody else have a reason why you're here? Yes. You want to be a good caretaker of this land. Yeah, absolutely. Because the land is such a good caretaker of us, right? It seems pretty easy to be that, like, think reciprocal, you know? Like, this should be symbiosis here. It takes care of me. I take care of it. It's great. I'm glad. This place is full of information on how to take care of our earth and our bodies and our communities. Anyone else? Yes. That's right. Everyone here is very stimulating, so it's really inspirational to come here, get the recharge, get the information, get the inspiration, and then take it back out in the world. And that's so important, too, to bring up, because so often we come to events like this, and we get our recharge here, and we leave our recharge here. Or we get our recharge here and we take it back into our homes and it stays there. And so, like, the power and the challenge of taking that inspiration and that energy out into a world that's doing everything it can to silence this kind of energy and this kind of inspiration. So it's a whole nother challenge to take it back out in the world. So I'm so glad you mentioned that as part of your statement is, hey, my goal is to not only come here and get recharged, but then it's to take it out and recharge the world. Anyone else? Yes. Right on. He said, I'm here because we have to take our country back, and I come here to get recharged to do that work. That's so important, right? Wowee. Like, what would it be like to live in a real democracy? I don't know, because I haven't lived there yet, but I'm looking forward to the day, right? And it's an important point to bring up, too, because so many people will complain about the government system, and then you say, well, do you vote? And they're like, no, because it's a corrupt system, and I'm not going to support it. Which I understand the thought behind that, but the reality is every right is a muscle. If you don't exercise your muscles, you lose them. So we're losing the muscle that we did have, what muscle we did have in the political system, and now the corporations and the corrupt government officials are beating the heck out of us with that muscle. So we have to re-exercise that muscle. And the beautiful thing is the internet and how, like, I don't understand the internet. It kind of scares me, but luckily I work with people who understand the internet, so that makes my life much easier. But for those who understand it, the internet is actually creating this powerful movement. How many of you have heard of MoveOn.org? Yeah. See, like, a lot of people here have heard about MoveOn.org, and it's creating that kind of system, is creating a way for people to realize that they're not isolated in their vote, that they can be a part of a collective push and a collective change. And if the heist of our politics that happened in the Bush administration had happened in other countries, people would have been out in the streets and they wouldn't have gone home till they got their government back. And at some point, us comfortable, numb people in this country are going to have to be willing to take that stand too and say, you know, I draw the line here, and I'm just looking forward to the day when we just go, you know, I'm all about the sitting down thing, you know. So I'm just like, let's just go to D.C. and sit down. They go, no, really, we don't feel like moving because if you were doing a better job, we could all go home, but you're really doing a bad job. So I think we're just going to stay for the next, I don't know, couple of years, or unless you change sooner. And that, you know, there's a great, how many of you have heard of Code Pink for Peace, the women's? Yeah. Like, didn't you love the campaign where they went in and handed pink slips? Oh, and I love that because what it shows us too is the power and importance of using creativity in re-evolution, in our resolutionary action, using creativity as the kind of core component. Because how can you get really mad at someone handing you a pink slip? Like, you know, it's like you can't, no matter how the media tries to spin that one, you can't create a demon out of someone who's holding a pink slip. It just doesn't work. So it's such a beautiful message too about how we can use our creativity and our vibrancy and our joy and our inspiration to change things like politics and take our system back. Okay, maybe one or two more. Yes, sir, in the back. Right on. I'm trying to repeat it because I know some people are outside of the voice level. So he said, I'm bringing my kids to show them that a better world is possible. And it's so beautiful because it's possible because it's happening. You know, how often do we get led to believe that possible means something far away from us instead of something we can be actively engaged in every moment of every day? So here is about all the ways we can actively engage in creating the world we want to see right now. So that's great. Are you having a good time? You just got here. Okay. You're making sure to hydrate, right? Everybody's hydrating? Okay, that's the Italian in me. We can't help it. Are you eating enough? Are you drinking enough? Okay, there's vegetarian food here. You know, eat it. It's good. It's good for you. It's good for the world. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. I want to find a job as a solar installer because I want to put my work where my beliefs are. That's so powerful. You know, I started thinking about that when I came down from the tree, and I thought that the whirlwind around me would be like 6 months, and then I'd be figuring out what I was going to do next with my life. And now it's like almost 4 years, and I still get more requests for my help than I can do. On a slow week, I get up to 25 requests for my help around the world. And it's not all just like speaking, like it's direct action and media organizing and all this stuff. And that's on a slow week. And so it made me start thinking about things, and I realized that we've kind of separated our life from our work, and I think that's part of why our life is being destroyed by so many of our jobs, and how beautiful it is to our life's work align with our life's work. So may you be blessed in that search for your life's work. Yay! Okay, because you've got like a really cool hat on and you jumped up with the biggest smile ever, you win. Woo-hoo! So the best way for you to fundraise is to hand your hat around right now. And anyone who wants to support your village for the WTO, you can't miss this hat. Whether you have 5 cents or 50 cents and you believe in what he's doing, if everyone here even gave 50 cents, when you do something from the grassroots, it goes a long way. And he's willing to be creative, and he's willing to do it, and he was willing to have enough courage to stand up and speak it, so he's got my support. I don't have any change on me at the moment, but after I'm done, I'm going to put change into his hat, and I encourage all of you to do the same, if you feel so led. But I encourage you to dig deep and see if you feel led. You can just pass it down and around. He's got a blue bucket, too. Not quite as cool as the hat, but it'll work. Okay, so I feel like we've gotten kind of a good sampling of some of the questions of why you're here. I know there's a bunch of you who have even more, but we could spend all day doing that. And part of the reason I start that is to encourage you to start doing that more. You know, like part of what I have found in my life is that a lot of people, I started finding they were projecting certain fears or hurt feelings or anger on me, and I had to really sit with it, and I started realizing part of the reason why is for whatever reason, the universe right now has given me the microphone. But it doesn't mean that what I have to say is any more important or any more special or any more vital than what anyone else has to say. And yet we live in a time where the access to share with each other is becoming smaller and smaller and smaller, where our ways of intercommunication, like KZYX is here, give it up for one of our last forms of communication, right? Woo! Public airwaves, what a concept. What happened to them? Can we have them back, please? So in this time where our forms of communication are being lessened and lessened, it's up to us to create this kind of dialogue everywhere we go, to be bold enough to ask someone what they think, and then ask for the opportunity to share your thoughts in return. And you know, there's this really powerful saying that's coming out right now with things like Indie Media, indiemedia.org. Check them out if you don't know them already. Yeah, another great media source is become the media. Like, don't wait for somebody else to do it. Just go ahead and become the media. So the ways we just interacted right now is a form of media. We just shared our thoughts, feelings, ideas, inspirations, questions, etc. with each other right now. And I'm holding a microphone and this camera's going, we just had interactive media. Give yourself a round of applause.
Hi, this is Betty Biodiesel, and you're tuned to listener-supported Radio for Peace International, your global community forum.
You are listening to Radio for Peace International and a speech given by Julia Butterfly Hill at the 2003 Soul Fest in Hopland, California. Radio for Peace International broadcasts on International Shortwave 7445 from UN territory in Costa Rica. To find out how you can help support Radio for Peace International, log on to our website, www.rfpi.org, www.rfpi.org. And stand by for more of Julia Butterfly Hill's speech in the 2003 Soul Fest.
My name's Wolverine, and I've been in the trees for like 9 or 10 months, and I support Radio for Peace International.
So for me, it's like I am so alive with the fact that I care about the world. And I'm brave enough to say that. And I say brave enough to say that because one of the things I really try and acknowledge in people is that if you're willing to care in the world today, it's the second most courageous thing you will do. And the most courageous thing you will do is to act from that place of care. Because we live in a time, we live in a world that's doing everything it can to numb us and stop us from caring. You have a problem, like children who happen to be brilliant and creative, here, have some Ritalin. You know, if you are feeling upset in your relationship, well, just lose another 50 pounds and fit into a size zero and wear the perfect makeup, and then we'll change the style on you, and then you'll have to change again. But sooner or later, you'll feel better. You know, these are the kinds of messages we're getting out in society that's trying to numb us and shut us off from caring. And if you're bold enough to care, you're going to be called names. I get called a few. Everything you just went running through your head when I said that and more, I get called that. And so it's really a challenge just to be bold and visionary and courageous enough to care in the world today. So I really try and start with really inviting that place. And in this moment, I also recognize something that's really vital for me to speak as a woman, because I live in a society where the rights of marginalized and oppressed peoples is still an issue, and that includes rights around being a woman and making decisions about my life and my world and my body and having equal access to pay and to jobs. But in all the things and where I don't have privilege as a woman, one of the ways I do have privilege as a woman over my male brothers is that in this society, it's a little more accepting for a woman to care than for a man. So in this moment, as I look out at all of the faces of my brothers in this audience, I want to take this moment to honor and acknowledge you for having the courage to care, especially as a man in this society. Thank you. Yeah. And part of the reason I say that is because I know the liberation of women and the liberation of plants and the liberation of animals and everything has to happen in solidarity. So if I see you, my brothers here, I know that I have allies in the liberation. I know I have partners in the liberation, and that feels really good. So I thank you for being a part of that so very much. Yeah. So there's so many things to talk about at an event like this. It's like, where do you start and where do you end? You just keep on going. But one of the things that's really important to me that I always talk about, and those of you who've heard me before have heard one or more of all this before, because I know that it's kind of the water wearing away at the stone that makes the change. Sometimes you want to come in with a hammer and just break it all apart, but sometimes that's not really the kind of change we want to create. And oftentimes in the structures in the society we're living in, it's kind of the water wearing away at the stone. And so for me, the water wearing away at the stone is about getting us to really, really, really reconnect. Not just understand it up here, and not to just talk about it, but to really get it. And so I've been thinking about when we're born, right? When we're born, we're so connected to the earth that we're like, you can't be much more connected than that, right? And then you start to grow, and then you're like wobbling. And then you stand up, and then you're walking. And as that process is happening, you're being shaped by everything that's being imaged to you, whatever your environment is, and it's different for each person. But the more we're shaped by that, the further we get disconnected from life, from that interwoven thread. And so we begin to look at things and actually call them trash and waste and disposable. And I talk about this a lot because to me, the disposability consciousness of our world is the mirror, it's the magnifying glass, it's the window into how not only have toxins been placed into our outward environment, it's been slowly dripped into the environment of our consciousness. And so where we've all become, we've all assimilated some of those toxins without even realizing it. And so I'm all about bringing out the inner child, in case you haven't told by now. I'm about reconnecting. I'm about getting back down in it and going, we have to move the toxins out. We have to recognize them for what they are without judgment. Because judgment in healing the toxins of our consciousness is kind of like chemotherapy to cancer. You know, it's like, why aren't we working on what's in the environment that's causing the cancer in the first place instead of the other option? And so we don't want to use judgment. We don't want to cut off the arm just because it's hurt. We want to work on holistic healing, and holistic healing can only come without a space of judgment. So it's really good to bring out the inner child for that, right? To be silly, to be creative, to be loving, to be nurturing. That's got to be a part of our healing. And for me, it's been kind of my mission ever since I came down from Luna, because when I came down from that tree, I felt in many ways as if I'd been living in a third world country for 2 years. And I came back into this very privileged industrialized nation and saw all the ways in which we are a part of disposability consciousness. When I'm at festivals, I walk around picking up other people's unconsciousness. That's what I call it. People are like, somebody was with me the other day. I said, oh, there's somebody's unconsciousness, and I picked it up. And they were like, what did you just call that? I said, that's somebody's unconsciousness. And they're like, oh, I get it. And it's like, because that's what it is, because there really is no such thing as waste, disposable, or trash. I've actually talked to people from traditional cultures all over the world and asked them if they're in their original language, in their traditional language, if they have words for waste, disposable, or trash. And as of yet, I still not have not found a word in any traditional cultural language for waste, disposable, or trash. And the reason I haven't is because there's no such thing. Right? We're here looking at the solutions that are modeled from the earth, our home. And if you look at the earth, does it create waste and trash? No. A tree in the city on concrete, the leaves are waste and trash that we must use an electric blower to blow it out in the street so that someone else will come along with another electric thing and suck it up because it's trash and it's waste. It's bad. It's messing up our pretty little view. Our nice clean sidewalks. Get those leaves off right now. But in the natural world, a leaf is something that falls to the ground, begins to decay, becomes a natural fertilizer, helps hold in moisture, right? It's got all of these profoundly phenomenal, interesting systems that are because it's not trash. It's not waste. It's a part of a system. It's a part of a holistic system. And so I saw this great, brilliant sign in Davis, at Whole Earth Festival in Davis. How many of you, have you been there? Yeah, it's another really cool one, especially because it's all youth run. Like, I gotta give props to the young people out there doing amazing things. So at Whole Earth Festival, I saw this sign that says, it's only called trash if you're not using it properly. Oh, yeah! That's one reason why I like you, too. The younger we get, the more simple we break it down. So I it's really, like, to me, it's kind of my evangelism, so to speak, because to me, the disposability consciousness is what leads to everything else. And so we have to start, to me, I want to talk about getting at the disease, because all of the issues are symptoms: deforestation, devastation of old growth, the prison industrial complex, nuclear proliferation, war, all the issues, lack of access to clean food and clean water. Every one of those issues are a symptom of a disease. And so we need to be working on the symptoms, but we also have to be working at the disease. And that's where I get riled up, because I want to create a community of people who are committed to get ourselves working at getting to the disease, and in the process, helping change the system. And that doesn't mean we don't hold really bad corporations accountable. You know, and this is where I'm going to get myself in trouble, but I have to do it anyway. Because BP Solar is here, right? And I'm really glad that there's solar, but there's still petroleum in BP. And until there's no more petroleum in BP, I feel a little bit like the solar might be a little bit of a greenwashing. So, I want to invite them to go all solar, and then I'll be their biggest cheerleader out there. Or biodiesel. B can stand for biodiesel, you know? What? BS? There you go. I was like, okay, I could have gone a couple of ways with that, and I know you could have too, so I'll just see which way you're going with that. So, I mention that only because I'm about holding corporations and corrupt government officials accountable, and at the same time, also encouraging them to do it right. So my thing is absolutely get rid of the petroleum, and I'm right there, you know? It's like, it's not the wave of the future, it's the heat wave that's oppressing us right now. That petroleum heat wave, global warming, I don't know, anyone else feel it? So, it's like, this is why I'm like, we do need to hold those systems accountable, but at the same time, I'm all about holding ourselves accountable first. And I love telling the story about Gandhi, because Gandhi was such a cool guy on so many levels. And one of my favorite stories, and I'm kind of paraphrasing it here, is there's a whole stream of people coming to see Gandhi, and a mother comes up and says, I want you to tell my son to stop eating so much sugar. And she's like, you know, he's eating so much, it's going to make him sick. And he won't listen to me because I'm his mom, but you're Gandhi. Right? Mom, Gandhi. And so Gandhi says, yes, I understand. Come back in a week. And if Gandhi tells you to come back in a week, well, then you just come back in a week. So they come back in a week, and the mother says, will you please, please tell my son now. He is like consumed. That's all he wants to eat is sugar. He's addicted to it. And he says, bring me your son. So she brings her son, and Gandhi says, you know, your body is a vessel. It's a gift. And you're hurting that gift right now. And when you eat that much sugar, you're hurting your ability to make your world a better place. You should really stop eating so much sugar. And the kid goes running up to his mom. I'm going to stop eating so much sugar. Mom, Gandhi told me to stop eating so much sugar. I'm going to stop eating so much sugar. And, you know, he's still hyper from the sugar. You have to give him a little while to calm down. And the mother comes up to Gandhi and goes, why didn't you tell him that last week? Gandhi said, because last week I was eating too much sugar. If we all lived with that kind of integrity, what would our world be like, right? Nobody knew Gandhi was sneaking snacks on the side. He didn't have to tell anybody. But he knew that holistic health meant from the inside out, not from the outside in, from the ground up. And so he was so committed to it that he knew that whether anyone knew it or not, it was not going to be holistic, lasting change if he wasn't living it himself. And so that's what our world is asking us all to do. Like, I've witnessed festivals like this have gotten even more conscious on the level of production each year, and I'm really excited about that. And all the vendors who are serving food on non-chlorine bleach, non-petroleum coated, all compostable materials, I'm really, really, really excited. Yeah. But I'm even more excited about us not waiting on them to take the responsibility. I'm even more excited about us taking the responsibility ourselves. And any of you who have seen me before know I talk about this a lot. See, here's my sustainability kit, right? You go somewhere, you don't use paper, you don't use plastic. Lid acts like a plate. It's a sealable container. You go out to eat. You don't take your food home in petroleum. Like, You know, I get blown away at how many people I see standing in the health food line at the Whole Paycheck stores. And, that was also in the catalog, wasn't it? And they're standing in line to get their organic food, and they get it in petroleum. What's healthy and organic about that? I don't get the connection. Right, the bottled water, that's another big one of mine. Because this bottled water is a perfect example about how what hurts the earth hurts the people. Because so often we have this dichotomy that says if you're involved in social justice issues, then you don't care about the planet. And if you care about the planet and are involved in environmental issues, then you don't care about people. And plastic bottles are such a powerful example because where those plastic bottles are made, most of them are made outside of the U.S. where there is low regulation on the toxic effluents that are released from the making of those bottles. If they're made in the U.S., there's only slight restriction. And I always ask people, have you ever stopped to wonder why is there any legal amount of toxins? How do we get to a point where we accept the fact that there's a legal amount of toxins being put into our environment? If someone came up to you with both hands held out with a little bit of toxic yuck in one hand and a big pile of toxic yuck in the other hand, and here, pick one. You'd be like, no, I think I'll skip today. Thank you very much. But we've kind of been numbed into this acceptance that a little bit of it is okay. But either way, there's toxins going into the environment. But the people who work in these factories don't even make enough to afford the water that's been cleaned up to be put in that plastic bottle, that the making of that plastic bottle polluted the water where they live. You see the connection? So we have to realize that. We have to be willing to challenge our boundaries of comfortability, you know? We have to be willing to be made fun of. We have to challenge our own. Where are we afraid to toe the line and put our foot over because it gets a little scary out there, because it might get a little difficult out there? And I'm like on this mission to see that every festival like this that I go to, that vendors don't have anything, because we're all bringing our own, because we just have this little kit that goes with us everywhere we go. And it's like our new latest fashion. You know, like instead of a purse, it's like, can you see it on the runways? Fashion for the new era. Right? So it's got to be about us, because the beauty of it is, you see how much fun it is? Like, I'm touching on some stuff that's not quite so fun. But if we're really willing to live it, it's fun. It's amazing to me that every time I face a new challenge, if I do my best, and I'm a human being, so I do make a lot of mistakes. But in the process of striving to be a person who lives in consciousness from the ground up, from the inside out, I get an energy and a joy and a vitality that I never had before in my life. And so I live off of that. I feed off of that. Just like our friend in the front said, coming here for that inspiration and taking it out in the world. Our world is asking us to step it up, right? That's all there is to it. We can sit back and wait for the superhero to come in and save the day, and the day's not going to be saved, right? It's the guy with the blue poster. But if you're the superhero, then nobody needs to talk to you, so we're all right, right? That's what I'm saying, because it's all about interaction. That's why I brought it up, is because it's all about interaction. It's about all of us getting involved, all of us participating, that we have to realize that we're all the heroes and the sheroes. When people come up to me and say, I could never have lived in a tree for 2 years, I'm like, neither could have I. Like, do you ever see that on your resume? Or like when you're a little kid, I hope to grow up someday and live for 2 years and 8 days in a tree. Like, it might be on little kids' wish list now, but, like, I don't know. But at least for me, it wasn't on my list of things to accomplish in my life. And if you had told me what was coming, I would have went running screaming in the opposite direction, because it was intense. But people know me as this 2-year, 8-day event, and they forget that it was moment by moment. There were times when it was breath by breath, and every breath became a prayer. If I can just make it through this one, I might make it through another one. And so it's like we all have our tree to sit in. And what I tell people is, if you wake up every day and ask yourself the question, what am I going to do today to make the world a better place, then you have found your tree to sit in. It's that simple.
This is Jim Hightower. You're listening to Radio for Peace International, broadcasting from Costa Rica, bringing you the world from the people's perspective.
Hi, my name's April Armstrong with the Redwood Peace and Justice Center in Arcata, California, and we support Radio for Peace International, broadcasting the people's voice out of Costa Rica.
You are listening to Radio for Peace International and a speech given by Julia Butterfly Hill at the 2003 Soul Fest in Joplin, California. Radio for Peace International broadcasts on International Shortwave 7445 from UN territory in Costa Rica. To find out how you can help support Radio for Peace International, log on to our website, www.rfpi.org, www.rfpi.org. And stand by for more of Julia Butterfly Hill's speech in the 2003 Soul Fest.
This is Jim Page, and you are listening to Radio for Peace International from Costa Rica.
What's the time? Is it wrap? I have to do a time check because I have no concept of time. How are we doing on time? We're doing okay. What time am I supposed to end? Never. 15 minutes. Okay, so how are the lightning storms? Well, they don't normally happen very often in that region of California. They're very rare. But one time it came very, 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 very close to where my hair on my arms and my head was standing up. Yeah, I was very electrified. It's where my personality comes from, don't you know? It just taught me more lessons, you know? So I want to bring it back to you, because I wanted to start with you and I want to end with you, because that's why I'm here. Yes. It's a big one, isn't it? His question was like, these are all important issues, but how do we deal with a corporate media that is brainwashing most of our children? 89% of the advertising dollars in the United States goes towards young people. That's billions of dollars. I think that should be, literally, I feel that should be considered a crime against humanity, right? Not okay. It's like they are spending billions of dollars to shape what we are. We're born sponges and we're just absorbing. So they're spending billions of dollars to get us to absorb a disconnected consciousness, to get us to absorb, to think that we're different. And I fell prey to that too. I always tell a story about when I was little, my family was really poor and I had to wear hand-me-downs, and I'm 5'10" and I've been 5'10" since I was 12. So hand-me-downs don't fit 5'10" 12-year-olds. And some of you have probably heard this story before. And kids used to call me Highwater Hill, because my pants were too short. And they would say, look out, here comes Highwater Hill, you better get out of the way, you're going to drown. Ah! And so from way young, I was being shaped by the same thing that was shaping them, even though I didn't watch media, because my parents were really brave enough to not allow us to have a television, which I hated them for then, but now I'm really thankful for. Yeah, you want to revolutionize the world? Get rid of your television. But an interesting thing, right? I come down from Luna and I'm being exposed to media for the first time. And I'm looking at the runways and the covers of the magazines, and there's all these women running around with pants that are 4 to 6 inches too short. And I'm like walking by, and all of a sudden I stop, like in a cartoon. Oh my God, they're wearing high waters! And they're like, Joy, you've been in a tree for a couple of years. Fashion has changed. It's going to be okay. You'll catch up. But the profoundness of that got me, that what made me stupid and ugly and bad and worthless as a child is now what makes a woman the haute couture. Fashion. You want to be right? You fit into a size 0 pants that are much too short. And that's the power of what you're speaking to. So, because I'm all about the solutions and not just about the problems, I started asking the question, why is everything that's bad for our bodies, our communities, our world, and our planet called the alternative? I mean, why is everything that's good? Sorry. Why is everything that's good for our bodies, our communities, our world, and our planet called the alternative? Right? Why is everything that's good for us the alternative? Why is what's happening here the alternative to petroleum, to dropping bombs, to pesticides and herbicides and genetic modification, to the prison system? And I started asking it, and the answer that came to me was because of what's happening in the media and how much of our culture here is shaped by what is perceived as cool. And so I started praying, and the answer came to me, consciousness is cool. And my friend said, yeah, and sustainability is sexy. And so I decided to, you know, I call myself a cliff jumper. Every chance I have of seeing another cliff, I just jump and see what happens. So I'm along with my incredible team that I get to work with. I'm so blessed to work with the people I work with. We launched this project called We the Planet, which is a festival and tour. And, Biodiesel Betty over here, the most gorgeous flower. Have you seen the flower? Come here, beauty. Yoo-hoo! She was there. So we decided to throw a festival and tour that brings the image of what mainstream culture perceives as cool with consciousness and bring them together. So we had a music festival in Golden Gate Park with 10,000 people. Yeah. And we did our best to reach out to the people who don't normally come to events like this. And because it was near Earth Day, I said, I want to create an Earth Day festival for all the people who make fun of Earth Day. And that's exactly what we did. So we had Alanis, I'm going to list a bunch of names. Some of them you might know, some of you might not. Alanis Morissette, Cake, De La Soul, Bonnie Raitt, Joan Baez, Tracy Chapman, The Coup, Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers was there. Woody Harrelson was there. Concrete Blonde was there. This whole list of celebrities, musicians, actors, and activists all came together. For a festival that's 10,000 people, they would normally fill up 10 dumpsters worth of trash. Like, I would like for us all to stick around and see how much trash we produce here so that we commit to never do it again here. So after normally a festival of 10,000 people has one dumpster per 1,000 people. That's how much get filled up at a festival. After 10,000 people left, like 5 minutes later, we looked out over the lawn, and the lawn was greener than when we got there. And after every booth, everything was taken down, we had less than one quarter of one dumpster of trash. Everything we produced on site was compostable and recyclable. Did not produce anything on site that fell under the terms waste, disposable, or trash. We were completely off the grid with biodiesel generators and solar panels. We had art and creativity integrally involved throughout the day. We had this great, huge, it's like a 15-foot tall GMO chicken from Heebie Jeebie Farms. And it has one eyeball, and its feathers are made from yellow caution tape. And then we had surrounding it all the groups who are working on food safety, food access, healthy food issues all around the chicken. We had water refill stations. We did not sell plastic bottles there. And we had water refill stations in this dome that's made from all those CDs that AOL sends you that you want to send back. We had this huge peace sign hanging from the stage made from guns that had been melted down and turned into a peace sign with a big thing of flowers coming out of the top of the rifle. It was great. It was this amazing day. So that's what I'm trying to do to help change the way we're reaching out. Because I majored in business in college, and now it comes in handy. And I think that our movement of consciousness has gotten very good at marketing and branding to a very specific group. And we have to work on getting out of that group and reaching out to a larger audience. So the tour starts on September 7th in San Francisco at New College of California, who also has a table here. Check them out. And we're going to go across the country in a bus powered by pure vegetable oil with backup biodiesel, which is vegetable oil plus a couple of ingredients. And we're going to take the same thing out on the road across the country. And basically, we're creating a media traveling center to reach out to the people who click on the television for their news to let them know that there's a whole other world out there. So thanks for your question. And I also want to say that as I share all these things, sometimes I start feeling like it starts to sound like me, 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 me. And I'm so not about that. I'm about we. I'm about all of us. So as I share my thoughts, my experiences, my work, I'm really trying to hold a mirror for you to look inside of yourself and say, what am I going to do? Like, if that's your passion, that working with young people, like, find the other creative people out there who have the same passion and help, you know, get something out there. It's like, there's so much we all can do. So I want to make sure and bring it back to that, that as I share the parts about me, it's really not about me. It's about all of us. Anyone else? Yes. Kucinich campaign. Y'all, I saw the t-shirt. Gave yourself away. Right. Kucinich is a... one of the reasons I really appreciate Kucinich is because he's a vegan. And the reason I say that is because what we put on the end of our fork and on our plate is one of the most revolutionary acts we're taking in the world today. And we have to realize that. And it gets touchy. People are like, oh, man, she was all cool. She still started talking about what I was eating. You know, it's time to go, honey. She said enough. Starting to push our boundaries of comfortability. We've had enough of this. But we have to realize that anytime we have a choice between A and B, some people got a choice between like A to Z, but if we have a choice between A to B, we have a privilege in that choice. And every privilege comes with responsibility. And we have become addicted to our privilege in this country and have not been willing to accept the weight of responsibility. And so each generation that comes after us inherits that hand of responsibility. And so our food choices are profound. If you have the freedom to choose, because some people don't. I was raised way poor. We got stuff from the government that was a big block of orange stuff called processed cheese food. It wasn't even real enough to be called cheese. It's the food they feed cheese, and then they fed it to us, right? So if you have the privilege to make a choice around your food, then you have the responsibility to make the best choice that you can make, because it is about the liberation of all people. Because we have to live in a world where animals are not exploited for food, where people are not marginalized by their access to food, that clean, healthy, organic fruits and vegetables and nuts and grains are the rights of all people, not just those who can afford to read the label and opt out. So realize that your fork is a weapon or it's a tool of transformation. You get to decide. What's on the end of your fork is a revolutionary act, especially in this country. So I like to talk about that too, because we sometimes look at the big picture and get so overwhelmed. By what you eat, you do affect air, water, energy, land, animals, people. All with what you put on the end of your fork. Changing the world is like that far away. You know, it's something that all of us have access to. And it does get touchy because people are like, oh man, I like my steaks. Then think about what world you want to live in and how much are you willing to do to create that world. It's that simple. Like, you want everybody else to do the work, then it's not going to happen if you're willing to be part of the change. And if some of you are out there going, I am addicted to my meat, girl, you best shut up. Then I encourage people to start with the first step, which is by reducing your intake of killing animals for food. Reduce the murder of animals for food. Gandhi said you can judge the morals of a country by how they treat our animals. The way we treat our animals for food is a pretty huge window into the morals of our country. So you can just take the first step of reducing, and then you just take another step of reducing. Before you know it, you're going to be dancing, because being vegan is really joyous. So you don't just step, you dance. Where do you think all my energy comes from? Okay, I think we probably have time for like one or two more. I'm looking for... You've had enough airtime. Love you, brother, but other people got to have a chance. Yes. Yes. Tell them about the mugs and the larger containers to carry water in. I actually encourage people to use glass to carry water in and not plastic. Part of the reason is because people don't realize that plastic leaches and the toxins store in fatty tissue, hence the reason why so many women are getting breast cancer, because it's like walking around with targets on us that goes, hi, store toxins here. So anytime the plastic gets hot, whether you put water in it or oil in it or hot food in it, it begins to leach the toxins from the plastic right into your food that you then absorb, that then stores in your fatty tissue. So I encourage people to use glass to store water in. I get like a juice jar, and then once it's empty, then I keep my water in that. And for storing food, I use stainless steel. In my nonprofit Circle of Life, where I'm headed after this, we created these kits to get rid of the excuses for not being conscious in our everyday lives. We are stainless steel, no aluminum to be like leaching and giving you Alzheimer's or anything. And we could not get these made in the United States. Like, to get a company to make them here, we would have had to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars to create a machine to manufacture these here. So we get them made in India, and we get them made And we have them shipped over by slow boat from India because it's the most environmentally sound way of shipping that we have yet to find. And I created it a little bigger than the normal ones that are made in India. If you've been to India, you've heard of them. They're called tiffins. But they're smaller, and the American diet is a little bigger than the other countries that aren't quite as privileged as ours. So I extended the size a little bit to hold the burrito, the Subway sandwich. Or if you're like me and love to eat raw food, you like a really big salad. So either way, it all fits in here. It comes with a stainless steel fork, knife, and spoon, and a hemp napkin that's made from scraps from a hemp company. And you can get it at Circle of Life, or we encourage you to create your own. It's up to you. But if you're the kind of person like, I don't have time to do that, stop by the nonprofit and get it there. And use reusables for everything, and then you carry them around, and then the food vendors don't have to invest in disposables, and then you can invest in a healthier world. Yes, they're here today. Circle of Life table with a new college table where I'm heading right after this. Where is it? It's in the nonprofit section because that's where I demanded it to be, over there. Because I'm like all about the nonprofits. On your way, stop at every single nonprofit and tell them thank you. Look them in the eyes and say thank you. It's amazing how far a simple thank you will go, because a lot of those of us on the front lines of nonprofit are used to having things thrown at us and being screamed at and yelled at and pepper spray and thrown in prison and things like that. So a little thank you goes a long way. And then see if there's a postcard to sign or legislation to sign or a phone call to make. When I was in that tree, every phone call, every sign letter, every sign photograph was a postcard was a part of helping us protect that area. It wasn't just me up there. It was a group effort. Okay, probably time for one more. And I'm feeling the need. Do we have a sister out there who wants, because I'm trying to get balance, gender balance. Way in the back. Yay. I was looking back there. I didn't see anyone. Woohoo! How's Luna doing? She must not have heard the beginning. Luna is doing amazing. As many of you know, Luna was attacked by someone with a lot of anger and a lot of fear and a very large chainsaw. And the expectation by the experts was that 2/3 of the tree would die back and become a snag, which becomes homes to tree voles and owls and things like that, red tree voles. And the other third of the tree would just keep on growing. And they expected that to happen within 2 years. And we're heading into 3 years now. And not only is there zero dieback, but we just went through the third spring and it was covered completely in new growth. So, yeah, pretty special. Yes, we used clay too. She asked if clay was packed in. There are a whole bunch of things. And part of the beauty of Luna surviving is because it was teamwork, including Pacific Lumber employees. Right? We love to kind of vilify or create a demon in order to have our foe, in order to create who we are. And I think that's part of the work we need to do as a movement of consciousness, is that we've gotten so good at defining what we're against that what we're against is beginning to define us. And we need to define ourselves by what we're for. And we need to create a world, right? And we need to create a world where we recognize everyone is family. Some of us are a little more wounded and are a little more sick than others, but we're all family. And Pacific Lumber employees, they had a metal shop, and they came in overtime. They were up on that mountain until 11:30 that night, and they worked with structural engineers and botanists and biologists and these amazing team of people who came together, and they created something that made me feel better. They were thinking about what would help the wound, and they literally structurally crafted out of metal butterfly bandages. Yeah. I was thankful. But it was just because that's what works. Like, you cut yourself, you connect it back together with butterfly bandages, and that's what they did. And it was Pacific Lumber employees who made those metal bandages. And I think it speaks to the power of being to reach outside our boundaries of comfortability also in what we do. Because it's easy to share in a community like this, and it's a whole other thing to take these thoughts out into the world. And that's why I began and ended with asking questions. Because one of the things I found in that tree was when I thought I knew it all and I had something to say to the loggers, the chainsaws started, right? It was their way of throwing their middle finger up at me. But when I started to ask questions, the dynamics began to change. And slowly but surely, they started answering. And all of a sudden, they realized that I was not a stereotype of a dirty, tree-hugging, granola-munching, tofu-eating, radical, extremist, wacko, hippie, foo-foo, new-ager out to get their job. And one of the things that was powerful for me was where I had to check myself and realize that when I even said the word lager, I literally had a taste in the back of my mouth. You know where you taste sour and acid at the back of your mouth? I literally realized I was having a taste back there. And I had thought I was all enlightened and I was past judgment and all that. And I realized there was some subliminal toxic buildup in my consciousness that I had to get real with. And we were able to heal together in our labeling and realizing that loggers aren't bad and tree huggers aren't bad. We're dealing with a system that is out to exploit people and the planet. And just as we're clear-cutting forests, we're clear-cutting their jobs. And the result is we need a world that works for every being, the animals, the plants, the trees, the people. So I think that's part of our challenge in this work is to challenge ourselves, step up our own consciousness, hold ourselves more accountable than others, because that's where the change has got to start, and be actively engaged in our world. Sometimes it's comfortable to come into spaces like this and say this is our form of activism, but our challenge now more than ever is our country is doing terrible things to people around the world, and if we don't act, it's the same thing as saying what they're doing represents us. Because when I first found out what was happening to the redwoods, I didn't want to get involved because I didn't have any experience. I didn't really have much knowledge. I didn't really want to become an activist. But the answer that came to me over and over in my prayers was, Julia, if you walk away from this injustice, your inactions are as much of the part of the injustice in the world as the actions of others. So the world needs us all to act out. So with that, thank you for speaking out, acting out, living out your beliefs for a healthy, loving world.
This is Tim Desmond, the Sea Ball Guy, and you're listening to Radio for Peace in Costa Rica.
You have been listening to Radio for Peace International and a speech by Julia Butterfly Hill. To find out more about Radio for Peace International, log on to our website, www.rfpi.org, www.rfpi.org.
My name is Remedy, and I sat in an ancient redwood tree for 1 year without touching the ground, and I support Radio for Peace International, the voice of the people from Costa Rica.